everyone. My name is Harmony. I'm presenting today on some of the correlates of binge drinking among a sample of homeless youth in the Los Angeles area. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. So because this is not a session on homelessness, I know that some people here may be somewhat unfamiliar with the population of homeless youth. I'll give you just a bit of a brief background. It is estimated that there are nearly 2 million youth who experience homelessness in the U.S. each year. I would say that's very likely an undercount. Homeless youth are not traditionally picked up the way that we do counting of homeless adults. They're not as likely to be sleeping on sidewalks. They're not as likely to be using emergency shelters. They're often a very hidden population that it's going to look like any other teenager or young adult that you're going to see. They're going to be couch surfing. They're going to be sleeping in abandoned buildings or on rooftops or other places where you're just not going to see them. So they're not as visible. Homelessness among young people really is associated with increased use of substances, increased consequences that are associated with substance use. A lot of that has to do with street life. Street life is very stressful. Substances might be used to cope with the experiences of street life, trauma, violence that happen on the street, but also you're just more exposed to substances when you're staying on the street and when you're associating with other homeless populations. And as it is in the general population, alcohol is the most commonly used substance. So I will be talking about binge drinking today. Homeless youth really experience very high rates of mental health disorder symptoms. There's a lot of comorbidity between mental health disorders and substance use and abuse in this population. Homeless youth also report really high rates of unprotected sex, exchange sex, having multiple partners. All of these things are very prevalent in this population. And other research has shown that social network factors, so those characteristics of the people that young homeless adults and youth are associated with, really impact their own behavior. So if they're associated with other young people who have risk behavior, they're often more likely to participate in risk behavior, but then also having pro-social alters in their social networks. Alters is network terminology for people that you have relationships with in your social network. That being associated with people who have jobs, with positive family members, with agency staff members, all of those things are actually associated with better outcomes and maybe protective among homeless youth. So in this current study, we interviewed youth who are using drop-in centers in the Los Angeles area. And this project ran for over 2 years. We went back to each drop-in center every 6 months and tried to interview everyone who was using those drop-in facilities for about a month or 6 weeks in each location. We ended up with more than 1,000 unique respondents. 992 of those people actually had complete data, and that's what I'll be looking at today. We ended up with 3 sites, one in Hollywood, Santa Monica, and one in Venice. About 74% to 94% actually participated, so that's of all the young people who walked through the door during our periods of data collection. We're able to get at least about 75% of them. The interviews were self-interviewed, so on a computer with audio assistance for those with low literacy. And then the social network interviews we actually did as an interviewer administered, and everyone received $20 for participating. 27% of our youth were female, so it's mostly a male sample. Their average age was 21 years. Mostly white, followed by African American. Mostly heterosexual. About 34% had a history of foster care involvement. 68% had at least a high school education. And about half of them reported that they were currently staying in a public place. So they were currently staying on the street, on the beach, in a tent or a campsite, abandoned building, somewhere like that. So as I go forward talking about my multivariable models, when I say controlled for demographic and homelessness characteristics, these are the characteristics that those models control for. So these are rates of mental health disorder symptoms in our whole sample. We measured PTSD using the primary care PTSD screener, and about 30% reported screened positive for PTSD symptoms in the past month. Using the CESD-10, about almost 55% of youth met the criteria for major depressive disorder in the past week. And about 12% had a suicide attempt in the past year. In terms of sexual risk behavior, a little more than 20% reported more than one vaginal or anal sex partner in the past month. Almost 50% reported that the last time they had vaginal or anal sex, they did not use a condom. 18% reported they'd ever exchanged sex for money, drugs, place to stay. Concurrent sex, which was measured by asking if they'd had, if they'd ever had more than one sex partner in a 1 week period. Oh, this is in the past year, sorry. 33% reported concurrent sex. And then about 40% reported that they had first had sex when they were younger than 15 years of age. When we asked about social networks, we asked about all the people who they had interacted with and had contact with in the past month, and then those characteristics of those people. And so what I looked at here was the proportion on average of alters who were currently homeless. So it's about 40% of individuals network on average. About 35% had jobs. About 40% youth reported that they were people they could confide in. So we consider that a measure of social support. A little more than 15% were currently in school. Very few, only 6% were agency staff at the drop-in center. And about 20% were relatives. So just putting that in a little bit of a different context, about 31% of youth overall reported at least one agency staff member in their network, and 70% of young people had at least one relative. So even though these were street-involved youth who weren't living with their families, there was still quite a bit of connection to families in some way. Okay, talking about binge drinking specifically. So binge drinking was defined as 5 or more drinks in a 2-hour period for males, 4 or more drinks in a 2-hour period for females. 49% of this population reported binge drinking in the past month. Compared to the general population aged 18 to 25 from SAMHSA data, it's 39%. So it's certainly higher than the general population, but not that much higher. When I looked at multivariable logistic regression models controlling for the demographic factors, binge drinking was more likely among male youth. Among those who'd had a lifetime experience of violent trauma, so that was being abused themselves, seeing someone that they loved violently hurt or injured, or being violently hurt or injured themselves. And then those reporting lifetime sexual risk, so early sexual debut, concurrent sex, and exchange sex, all were associated with a much greater likelihood of binge drinking in the previous month. Protective factors against binge drinking. Youth who are black or mixed or other race were much less likely to report binge drinking than white youth. And then having a larger proportion of social network members in whom they said they could confide. So social support seemed to be a protective factor against binge drinking in this population. I also looked at the severity of binge drinking or the frequency of binge drinking among youth who reported any binge drinking. Again, males were not only more likely to report any binge drinking, but also more frequent binge drinking. Again, concurrent sex was associated with more frequent binge drinking, not just any drinking. And then what came out here was that having more currently homeless social network alters. So this might be a measure of kind of a greater embeddedness in street life and in homeless social networks was associated with a greater frequency of binge drinking. Black showed up again as a protective factor, black youth compared to white youth, and then having a greater proportion of staff members, people at the agency who you had a good relationship with, who you considered members of your social network, was associated with decreased frequency of binge drinking. And this is all among binge drinkers. So this is cross-sectional data. So I really can't talk about these as actual consequences of binge drinking, but theoretically that's how I frame this. I wanted to think about, within this past month, what are some of the possible concomitant risk factors with binge drinking? So in these models, again, controlling for demographic and homelessness characteristics, I wanted to see if binge drinking held out as a significant predictor of some of these recent mental health and sexual risk behaviors, rather than more lifetime measures. So I did find binge drinking was associated with an increase in the odds of past month PTSD symptoms, It was associated with an increase in the odds of the last sex being unprotected, and it was very, very much associated with the odds of having a past month multiple sex partners. So 63% of binge drinkers versus 37% of non-binge drinkers had multiple anal or vaginal sex partners in the past month. I also looked at this in terms of severity or frequency of binge drinking, and that was actually not associated with these outcomes. So really it was whether you binge drink or not, not how frequently you participated in binge drinking, that was associated with these mental health and sexual risk behaviors. So yes, these homeless youth do report high levels of binge drinking in the past month. 50% is pretty high. But these rates are not nearly as disproportionate compared to the general population rates as they are with more illicit substances. So this is about 25% higher than rates in the general population. If you look at something like cocaine, the rate in this particular population from this study is 15 times higher than the general population. When you look at methamphetamine and heroin use, those rates are more than 30 times greater than in the general population. So while I'm obviously talking about binge drinking today, and I do think it's important, and we know that there are important correlates of drinking for risk behavior, I do want to make the caveat that there are certainly other issues going on with these young people above and beyond just alcohol consumption. Binge drinking in general was more likely among those who had lifetime exposure to violent trauma and sexual risk experiences. Well, these are not modifiable characteristics. We can't change what's already happened to young people. So these are not really areas for intervention, except that we can try to understand that there is a particular profile of vulnerability that exists among young people, young homeless adults who are binge drinking, that we really need prevention programs for these people because they're at the intersection of a lot of different risk factors. And so hopefully we can make this more of a priority to actually be helping these young people, not just with substance use issues, but with mental health and sexual risk behavior as well. How can we actually try to intervene? Well, let's hope that we can help to young people to maintain those emotionally supportive and pro-social networks. So drop-in centers, shelters, all of these things should encourage internet use, Facebook. These are all ways that people keep in touch with family members who might not be nearby to them. Allow phone usage, allow young people to charge their cell phones, help them keep and maintain access to a single cell phone number. All of these are things that can help people maintain their pro-social network ties and keep them from becoming too embedded in the street networks. Again, it's difficult to parse whether, when we're talking about these network factors, whether they are causing substance use or whether people are choosing to associate with other substance users because they are already substance users. I still think that networks are an important potential target for intervention, and particularly when we talk about harm reduction, helping people to understand the impact of their peer relationships on their substance use can be important. Youth who binge drink were more likely to have concurrent PTSD symptoms. Are they possibly self-medicating their symptoms? Or is drinking causing them to be involved in activities that are associated with traumatic experiences that are causing PTSD? I'd love to do some longitudinal research at some point to try to parse this out, but it's really unclear what the causal mechanism, what the direction of causality is in these cross-sectional data. Binge drinking youth were more likely to report current sexual risk behavior. If you take one thing away from this presentation, I would like that to be it, that we need to incorporate condom use, condom negotiation, safer sex skills in all of our substance use prevention programs with young people, particularly with homeless young people, because they are at extremely high rates for HIV, risk for HIV and other STIs. Severity of binge drinking didn't seem to matter. So if you're trying to look for an easy way to intervene with young people, assessing whether they binge drink or not might be enough to understand whether they could be better served by some particular program targeting substance use and sexual risk behavior reduction. Mental health services, obviously very important for this population. I mentioned this, that the cross-sectional data doesn't allow us to make causal inferences. We really need to have some sort of longitudinal research to understand the causal mechanisms in here. I tried to make this about every possible arrow one could put in here. We really don't know how all of these things interact with one another, and I hope that we get the chance to figure that out. Also want to note that these are young people using drop-in services, so they are only service-seeking youth. Drop-in services are a pretty low barrier in terms of services that young homeless people might be seeking out, but not representative of those people who might not even be accessing this type of service, and those young people might be even at higher risk for mental health disorder symptoms, substance use, and sexual risk. References. And that's all. Thank you.